Welcome to episode 1450 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day, based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. We are in the midst of a series on the life and times of the apostles, continuing this week with a focus on the Apostle Peter. In our last episode, Peter experienced the deepest failure of his life, denying three times that he even knew Jesus before the rooster crowed. Today, we enter the strange and uncertain space between despair and faith, following Peter from a locked room filled with grief to an empty tomb that raises more questions than it answers, and offers the first glimmer of hope that the story may not be over after all. Acts of the Apostles, Part 1, Chapter 10.
The 3 days. I have tried many times to describe what those 3 days were. I have never found adequate language. It was not simply grief, though grief was there. It was not simply fear, though fear was everywhere in that room. We were wanted men, followers of a condemned rebel, hiding behind a locked door in a city that had just put our rabbi on a cross. It was something underneath grief and fear. The particular devastation of a story that has ended wrong. We had followed him for 3 years. We had left everything. We had believed, really believed, in the bone and not just the mind, that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And now he was in a tomb, sealed with a stone, guarded by soldiers. And I had denied him 3 times before the rooster crowed. In that locked room, with that particular weight on me, the silence of those 3 days felt like a verdict.
As you know, the Passover is 2 days away and the Son of Man will be handed over to be crucified. Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. Truly I tell you today, you will be with me in paradise.
We did not talk much. What was there to say? The conversations that did happen were the conversations of people trying to construct a future out of rubble. Some spoke of going back to Galilee, back to the boats, back to the life we had left on the shore 3 years ago, as if you could simply step back into it, as if the nets would still fit your hands, as if you would not lie awake every night hearing his voice say, "Follow me." I do not know what I would have done. I was not thinking in terms of futures. I was still in the courtyard, still at the fire, still watching him turn and look at me across all that terrible distance. The women went to the tomb before dawn on the first day of the week. That was their work, the preparation of the body, the burial spices, the final acts of love that the Sabbath had interrupted. We let them go. We stayed behind the locked door. I have thought since about what it means that the women went and we did not. I have not thought of a satisfactory explanation. Only this: they went because love, in the end, is less afraid of grief than of absence. They could not stay away from where he was, even sealed in stone. We could not make ourselves go toward that. And then Mary came running.
"Open up, Peter. John, it's me, Mary." "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we don't know where they have put him."
I was moving before she finished speaking. I cannot explain this precisely. 3 days of paralysis, of sitting in a locked room unable to imagine a future, and her words broke something open in me. Not hope exactly. Not yet. Something more primitive than hope. The need to see for myself. To go to the place and stand in it and know with my own eyes what was or was not there. John ran with me. John is younger than me. John has always been faster than me. He reached the tomb first. He stooped and looked in, and then he stopped, at the entrance. He did not go in. I did not hesitate. I went in. If I could just step back and reflect on that for a moment. That is the most Peter thing in the entire Gospel of John. John arrives first, stops at the threshold, and waits. I arrive second, out of breath, and go straight through the entrance without breaking stride. I am still not sure whether that was courage or the inability to stop once I had started moving. With me, the two are often indistinguishable. The tomb was empty. That was the first thing, the obvious thing. He was not there. But it was not the emptiness that stopped me. It was what was in the emptiness. The linen burial cloths were lying there. And the cloth that had been wrapped around his head, it was folded, separate from the other cloths, laid to one side. Folded. I stood in that cave and looked at those cloths for what felt like a very long time. If someone had stolen the body, the first explanation that presented itself, the one Mary had assumed, you do not stop to unwrap it first. You do not remove the burial cloths, fold the head covering neatly, and place it to one side before making off with a corpse in the dark. Thieves do not fold things. And if the body had simply been moved, by the authorities, or by the gardener, or by anyone with a practical reason, same problem. The cloths stay with the body. The cloths were there, arranged. As if whoever had been inside them had simply left. Pass through them the way light passes through a window, leaving the glass intact and the frame empty. John came in after me, and John saw and believed. That is what he writes. He saw and believed. I saw, and I wondered. I want to be precise about this, because the difference matters. Belief and wondering are not the same thing, but they are not opposites either. Wondering is belief in its earliest form. Before it has enough light to see by, before it knows what it is looking at, before it can find the words. I stood in that empty cave with the folded grave cloths, and something in me said, "This is not finished. This is not over. Something has happened here that you do not yet have a category for." I did not know what. I went home wondering. There is a version of the resurrection story that moves too fast. That rushes from the cross to the empty tomb to Pentecost, as if the distance between them is a single step, as if the disciples simply flipped from despair to triumph when the stone was rolled away. It was not like that. The empty tomb did not produce instant faith, it produced questions. It produced wonder. It produced a kind of trembling openness, what if, that is different from certainty and more honest than false certainty would have been. The disciples who ran to the tomb that morning were not the disciples who preached at Pentecost. The transformation between those two moments took time and appearances, and a fire on a beach, and the breath of the risen Jesus on the disciples in a locked room, and 40 days of his presence before the ascension. Faith is rarely a single moment. It is usually a direction, a turning, a series of steps, each one making the next one more possible. That morning, standing in an empty tomb with folded grave cloths and no framework to hold what I was seeing, that was one step. A step toward something I did not yet understand and could not yet name, but I took it. And when you do not know what else to do, taking the next step is enough. He was not there. Whatever that meant, it meant something. I walked back through Jerusalem in the morning light, turning it over, not yet able to see where it was taking me. That evening he would come through a locked door and show us his hands. But that is the next episode.
Many of us live in the space between Good Friday and Easter morning. We carry unanswered questions, disappointments, losses, and situations that seem beyond redemption. Peter's experience reminds us that faith often begins not with certainty, but with wonder, the willingness to take the next step, even when we do not yet understand what God is doing. The empty tomb did not answer every question that morning, but it opened a door to hope. When our lives feel stuck between grief and resurrection, God does not always give immediate explanations. Sometimes he simply invites us to keep moving toward him, trusting that the next step of obedience may reveal more than we can presently see. To be continued.